Hey there. Before we jump into the meat of the podcast and our conversations, I really want to say thank you to Papa for sitting down with me to record these stories. Over the last 20 years, many friends and family have tried to get him to write down his experiences or dictate them or record audio, and he was always very humble about his accomplishments. And whenever I would bring up writing down his stories, he would brush it off and say something like, "Who would want to read about me?" or "I'm not that special," or "What I did, you know, wasn't very special." And I think some of that came from rubbing elbows with really big personalities, and some of it came from his upbringing. Either way, he really didn't think anyone would find his life interesting, but I continued to tell him that the variety of businesses and the success that he had in each one of them was really unique, and that at the very least, we would have the stories for our family. So fast forward to March of 2020, during the early quarantine lockdowns, we were waiting for the weather to warm up to get into the fields and for cows to start giving birth. And we were just sitting in his office one day on the farm talking about a story that his grandfather had shared with him. As a boy, William Marion Owens had watched Civil War soldiers walk home through his family's fields after the war had ended. His mother would put out benches, feed them soup, and clean wounds with fresh bandages. So I asked him, wouldn't it be great if we had a recording of that story to listen to right now? And I think that's what ultimately changed his mind about doing this. So that day we set up a microphone, a camera, and started chatting. When we went to turn those recordings into a podcast to share with friends and family who had asked for it, the audio just wasn't quite right. So in the summer of 2021, we set up shop in a podcast studio with the help of a great friend, and we set about recording Papa's stories. It was such a special experience to get to do this with him, not once, but twice. I truly treasured the weekly one-on-one time with him amidst our just busy and chaotic lives. So it's with a heavy heart that I share, on October 5th, 2021, Gary passed away peacefully in his home on the farm. And, you know, listening to these episodes again has helped me immensely, just manage the loss. And I hope it can do the same for everyone else that knew him. And for those of you listening that didn't know him, I hope you can enjoy learning about a life that was lived fully. So without further ado, here is the Can't Stop Moving podcast. Hey there, I'm your host, Justin Owens, and this is the Can't Stop Moving podcast, a deep dive into the life, experiences, and businesses of my very own grandfather, Gary Owens. Each episode, we discuss a different segment of his life or a particular business. He was doing so many different things at the same time, it was really difficult to go in chronological order. So you'll discover quickly that we go off on tangents and down random rabbit holes. But bear with us as I figure out how to interview someone I've known my entire life and attempt to tease out stories I've heard for the better part of 30 years. I guess thank you for coming and sitting down with me and recording these stories of yours and stories about your life. I think jumping into the first episode, we'll start talking about where you grew up. I mean, you were born in Spokane, but You spent a lot of time growing up in Oklahoma. Both your parents were born in Oklahoma. I mean, what brought them to Spokane?
In the first place, or when I was around?
Oh, I guess, I mean, wherever the connection started, what made the connection with Spokane from Oklahoma?
In the Dust Bowl days in 29, 30, 31, during the Depression, in the Dust Bowl in the South, cows would sell for $19. People didn't have any money. They'd pay. My grandfather was a doctor, and they'd pay him with chickens and pigs and eggs, and times were tough. And so our family was in Woodard, Oklahoma, Buffalo, Oklahoma. That's where the last great herd of buffalo in the United States was there, and eastern Oklahoma, western Oklahoma. And so during the Depression, they came, they called them Okies and Arkies. They left Oklahoma and the Dust Bowl and Arkansas and headed for California. So they would go kind of migrate along the Oregon Trail, what was later the Oregon Trail, or earlier the Oregon Trail, and they would then turn south and when they get into Oregon and go to California or go to Washington. So our ancestors, some of them went to Sunnyside, Washington, and they wound up in Spokane.
Didn't you start off living in Malden?
Yeah, Dad, during the war, World War II, Dad worked on the Milwaukee Railroad, and we lived in Malden, Washington. And Sis went to high school in Pine City, and Larry and I went to Malden, in Malden to the grade school.
Well, let's back up a little bit, because I feel like there used to be a lot of back and forth moving to Spokane, and then it was like family in Oklahoma would say, oh, no, it's all better again. Right. Come on back, and everybody would move back, and then it would be over. Terrible.
Yeah,
and they'd move back to the Northwest.
Yeah, and they'd pick apples and... But, you know, they'd say, well, the Dust Bowl's over, come on home. And we'd go back to, they'd go back to Oklahoma, and Dust Bowl wasn't over. So they'd come back to Washington. And some of the family went to Sunnyside and picked apples. I forget who was, went to, Uncle Leo went to Spokane first. And so he leased a place for us a year before we came, and he farmed on it. And it's what's now the Hangman Golf Course. But there's 1,140 acres down there, and it was owned by E.M. Perry, Edwin Perry. And Mr. Perry... as a boy, a young man, bought the Wurlitzer Jukebox franchise west of the Mississippi. So when he was in Spokane, he bought up 1,140 acres for taxes. People couldn't pay the taxes on it. And there was like five different farms that he put together to make the 1,100 acres. And so we leased that and came from Oklahoma to the Perry place. And it had no fences. There's a golf course there now and where the lake is. That used to be our cow pasture. And that was the only part that was fenced, 10 acres. The rest of 1,100 acres, we turned the cows loose. We accumulated 100 head, milk cows, 20 milk cows, and 80 other, you know, we'd raise baby calves up to cows. So Larry and I have a twin brother. We'd take the horses and we'd follow the cows out in the summertime. We'd just turn them loose and we'd take our lunch and the horses, and we'd herd them cows, keep them on in Hangman Creek because they'd eat it down a little. They'd want to move on past our leased land. So we'd stay with on the horses with the cows all day. The neighbor kids, the Williamses, had 10 kids, and they had a bicycle. And we'd never ridden a bicycle. We grew up on horses in Oklahoma. And so when we're herding cows, the Williamses would come and they'd want to ride our horses and we'd want to ride their bike.
And now, is this the same family where the first time you saw one of their siblings?
Calvin. Mrs. Williams was a large woman. Mr. Williams was a little bitty guy. So she'd get pregnant and he wouldn't know it. And so she'd, right at the very end, she'd tell him, "We're going to have a baby." So one day we come up there and he said, "Come look at our new baby." We go up there and it's wintertime. And so he goes in and the oven's open. The door's, you know, the oven door is down. And she's got Calvin in there in a pan with a blanket and on a wood stove. But she cooked on a wood stove. She knew how to handle that volume or, you know, heat on that wood stove, because that's how they heated the house. That's how she did her cooking. So the first time we saw Calvin, she pulls out the drawer of the oven and there's Calvin in the pan.
That's a unique situation.
They were a great family.
Now, didn't you have other neighbors down there
Let me think of their name. There was Harold, Hazel, Violet, Velma, Monty, Larry, Calvin. I can't think of all of them, the names, all 10.
You know, I actually think I'm thinking back to when you would be in Oklahoma, where you, trying to think back to where it started. It might have been the schoolhouse in your uncle's pasture.
Schoolhouse that blew away.
Maybe. Which one? I feel like there was a little bit of a scuffle before the first day of school. Well, that was in Malden.
Yeah, in the first grade, we were in Malden. Dad worked on the railroad during the war. So we're playing on a playground, and they should come out, you know, come up here, line up at the door. And so we goes up and gets in a line at the door, and the guy had went, he called us up, and then he went back inside and closed the door. And then so when he came back out and opened the door, before he opened the door, a fight breaks out in front of me. Larry and Cecil Piper got in a fight, and so Freddie Piper jumped in, so then I had to jump in. So we were all scuffling away. We hadn't even gotten the door of the school. And this superintendent comes out, separates us, hauls us in. So we were the first ones in the door by the collar of our shirt.
And you were how old?
First grade.
Okay. Now, Cecil Piper and his brother, are they the ones that you learned? They played a prank on Larry, didn't they? With the tobacco.
Oh, that's a different outfit.
Oh,
that's in Oklahoma.
Man, I'm getting them mixed up. All right, we might back up and because how old were you when you moved from Oklahoma to Spokane?
Oh, we were in the fifth grade in Washington, but in Oklahoma, the first grade was in Mahlon, second grade was in Woodard, Oklahoma, and we went to there was a school. Uncle Frank owned 8 or 10,000 acres, and he fenced off built a Rose Valley School number 6, and we were in the second grade. Mrs. Shaw was our teacher, and we kept in contact with her. She kept in contact with us until she was 90-some years old, but she was a great teacher. It's a one-room schoolhouse in Uncle Frank's pasture, and he fenced around it so the cows couldn't. Well, we had an outhouse for the girls and an outhouse for the boys, and he fenced around it so the cattle wouldn't rub up against the outhouses and knock them over. And there was 10 of us in the school, including Mrs. Shaw or without Mrs. Shaw. There was 10 of us. And they had a guy named Quisenberry. She'd teach us, and then they had tests at the end of the year, and this guy named Quisenberry would bring the tests around, the county tests. And then we'd fill them out, and then he'd come pick them up. And boy, we feared that guy. And I remember just like looking at him in a picture right now. He had a head like an Angus bull, and it was bald, and it had a knot, like a bull has a knot right on top of his head. He had a knot. And Quisenberry.
Let's talk about the tornado that went through Woodard.
April 9th, 1947, 8:30 in the evening. A howling wind came up. It sounded like a freight train coming our way. We lived in a locust grove on the Klein Place, and it had a pond in front of the house, natural-fed pond with natural springs. And there was a locust grove there, and it's about 30 feet tall, and we couldn't see anywhere. We were in the locust grove. We could look out the one side, but the west side, south and west and north, we couldn't see anywhere. We could look out straight out east. So the town, we were 2.5 miles out of town, and they were in the south from the south. We were downwind from the southwest. And the wind comes up, and we're in the house. Larry and I are in bed. Mom's reading his Bible stories. Thump, tree hits the house. And Dad gets up, look out the window. We were in a grove. You couldn't see anywhere toward the southwest. Woodard looked out the window, and he said, "Oh, my God, Vivian, you can see Woodard. The locust trees were laying low enough. These 30-foot trees were laying low enough, half of them blown out. And today you go in there and they're still alive, a lot of them, because they blew over, but the roots stayed in the ground, enough of the root, that they're alive, they're just laying down." And he could see that the town was on fire. He said, "Oh, Woodard's burning." And it was a Big 7 grocery store. Gas line got on fire. And it looked like the whole town was burning. Well, it was raining and blowing, and it blew the east half of Woodard away.
Well, and didn't it save your house, that all the trees that fell on the house?
Five trees hit the house. We could walk up one side and down the other on those trees. Kept the house from moving. Well, moved a little bit. Maybe.
And didn't you guys go down into a cellar?
So when the first tree hit the house, Dad looks out and can see Woodard's on fire. So we said, well, we'd got to get to the cellar. We had a cement storm cellar about 15 feet from the back porch. It's a screened-in porch. So we got a hold of each other, hand, you know, in a line, and a big old tree fell between the house and the root cellar. So as we're hanging on to each other, we crawled through that tree and got in that storm cellar and rode out the storm that way. There was 5,000 people in Woodard then. There's 10,000 or 12 now. But it blew the east half of Woodard away, the west half, the west.
And west your half. And your sister, who was 10 years older than you, mm-hmm. when did she go in and work?
Telephone operators were on strike. That's when you called, you picked up the phone, and the operator would say, you know, you'd say, I want to call so and so. And they would unplug your plug and put it into their plug on the board, and they connect you to whoever you want to talk to. So they were on strike, but Sis went in and worked anyway during that storm. And another funny thing happened. Our Sis was a beautiful girl, 10 years older. Monty Hale, Western cowboy singer from Ada, Oklahoma, came to Woodard, and the theater, all the kids, and you know, he was like Roy Rogers. So we all goes in and see Monty Hale, and he's up there doing his song and stuff. He stops. We're sitting in the third or fourth row, right in the middle. Took Larry and I in to see Monty Hill. He calls Sis up to the stage, and she walks up, little bitty thing. She walks up to the stage. He gets down on his hands and knees and kisses her.
Were your parents there?
No. She was that good looking. Picked her out of the crowd. Just a thought that came to my mind.
Well, thinking about her and you guys at that age, when did she start? She started dating JR, and who she eventually married. But you and Larry had to kind of test his mettle.
Well, Dad was in the war. Dad was working on the Milwaukee Railroad at Mahlon, and she was going to Pine City High School, and we were going to Mahlon grade school. And so when we go to Oklahoma, Sis is with us. And so Junior, he's in love with Sis. So he comes down to Oklahoma to court her. So Larry and I figure, see what this guy's made out of. So Dad had suckered and bought a good-looking quarter horse, and flax mane and tail, and four white socks, and she was all dressed up. Idiot. She was just crazy. She ran away with Dad, and he hit a four-wire barbed wire fence full blast, tore her chest open. She's just a nut. So Junior's coming down to court Sis, and we figure we'll test him. So we had a round corral, and it's about 9 foot tall, a pole corral. So we get the horse in there, put a blanket over its head, saddle it up, tell Junior it's a round corral. And so we tell Junior, when you get on, keep low, swing your leg low and quick, get on quick. So he does. We whip the blanket off her head and we head for the trail. We get up on the top railing and watch. That horse goes ballistic. She's bucking and he's. I don't know if he's ever been on a horse. And so we had him on his horse, and she just went around and around and around that trail, bucking all the way. And he rode her till she ran out of air. But as he went around, he said it was like two owls sitting on the fence watching him. As each time he went by, these kids were big old eyes looking, watching him. he rode her, I don't know how many times around that trail she went till she ran out of air. She just stood there, and we were pretty well impressed. He passed the test.
So when you guys were living on the Perry place, Mr. Perry sometimes gave you guys jobs to do, you and Larry. I think one time you guys were driving a truck, and you had some bright ideas on how to unload it quicker.
Edmund Perry owned half of Division Street in East Sprague. He owned Interstate Novelty. And his office was right below where Dick's Drive-In is now, down before you, just before you go in the under the railroad viaduct. It's on the left. As a boy, he bought his jukebox, Willitzer jukebox franchise west of the Mississippi, and he made a ton of money. So that's how he bought the Perry place. He bought five farms for taxes. But we'd go in there, and he had all these slot machines, and there'd be money all over the floor. We're walking on nickels and dimes and quarters, and we ain't got a quarter to our name. And he'd repair those things, and the ones that got outdated, he had us bring the truck in and haul them away. And they were the kind that they weren't 6 feet tall or 5 feet tall. They were 3 feet tall, and they stood on a stand, metal stand with four legs. So it became obsolete, and so he had us come in with a truck, and we hauled truckloads of those things out to the Perry place, which is on Hangman Creek. And so where Stevens Creek runs into Hangman Creek, there's a bend there, and the county road, there's a bridge there over Stevens Creek, and it goes up toward what's the clubhouse now. But the creek made a round there, curve, and he was afraid that the creek was going to wash out the dirt and take out the county road. So he said, take those slot machines and lay them in the bank, plant them in the mud, in the dirt, the mud. So when the river comes around, there'll be something to hold that dirt and won't wash out the county road. So if you went down there today, there'd be 1,000 slot machines buried in the mud. Still there.
Yeah, I think ecology would have something to say about that today.
Well, they'd thank him because it didn't wash out the road. Now, you know, one time, 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, raining like crazy. We're on the Perry place. Knock on the door. These two boys, two boys. It's prom night in Spokane. These two boys are standing there in their suits, dripping wet. They had daddy's big new Lincoln prom night, and they take their girls out in the woods, and they drive off the road there where Stevens Creek goes into Hangman Creek. They bury that Lincoln clear to the frame. I mean, they rocked that sucker back and forth until it was on the frame. So they come knocking on the door at 1 or 2 in the morning. Said, would you pull us out? So Dad gets me up. I drive the dozer up there, the cat. And this car is buried. So it's on the frame, and there's no room to get my hand under to get the log chain on the frame. And I said, can't do it. And the kid said, I said, it had a bumper on it. And I said, he said, well, hook it to that bumper. I said, that bumper is not going to hold. It's going to look like an arrow when I get done, if I can even pull you out. And I said, I'll do it, but you got to put it on the bumper. So this kid, he goes over and just hooks it on the bumper. I put that sucker in gear, and that bumper just went out to a point. And I got him out of there, but boy, did it look funny, that bumper on the front of that car. Oh, Daddy, big Lincoln.
I'm glad I wasn't driving that home. All right. Well, let's circle back. I mean, just with this episode, kind of talking about your early life and school days, high school, what little college you went to. I guess it would really be incomplete if we didn't bring up the tractor crossing Hangman Creek.
Well, every winter, Hangman Creek floods in the spring, January, and it silts in everything. Just the banks are, any roads dozed in are gone. So every year you have to take the dozer and go doze both sides of the creek to get a road across the creek. So I get my road built. And we'd have to get to across the creek, we'd have to go 15 miles down to Hatch, bottom of Hatch Hill, back up to Washington Road, down the old trail to the creek and doze it out the other side. So I had it all dozed out. Springtime, I goes over and I seeds barley. It's 5-6 acre piece. And I ran out of barley out of the drill. And I had a skip around in it, just in the center skip. The neighbor, Einar Eichram, called up and said, that's sure ugly, that skip where you made. So the drill was still over there. So I get the tractor and a sack of grain. It's springtime. Minneapolis Moline tractor, big, tall wheel tractor, had fenders on each side. So it had a hand clutch. You had to stand up to drive it. In the seat, you straddled the seat, so you kind of locked in there. So I'm crossing Hangman Creek where I dozed the banks down, and the radiator's whipping up the water. So I'm standing on the grain sack on the seat, driving to get it across. Goes up the other side. We had a hard time keeping brakes on this big wheel tractor. So it goes up the other side, and I get up to the level, and I had a hand clutch. I kick it out of gear, and I start to grind it, put it in the next gear, and it starts to roll back real slow. And holy cow, hit the brakes, no brakes. So I thought, well, I'll just ease it along the bank and
slow it up. Try to bring it to a stop by running the wheel into the bank, yeah.
Only trouble was is the lug tread on the tire caught the bank and flipped it over and crushed me. And so I remember coming to and I could hear the water.
To continue this conversation between Justin and his grandfather Gary, check out episode 2 of Can't Stop Moving.
Don't forget to like, subscribe, and download so you don't miss a single episode. You can find Can't Stop Moving Podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. Visit us at owensfarms.com and interact with us on Instagram at Modern Farmer USA.